Blog Talk Radio.
You have reached the family of Airwaves America. Renaissance Radio presents the Dave and GC Rock Show. This is a show where we try to think for ourselves and offer thought-provoking, stimulating, informative, and entertaining discussion. Welcome.
And welcome. This is Dave of the Dave and Juski Rock Show. This is Airwaves America. Our show is called Renaissance Radio. We got lots to talk about. We got a great show. If you want to give us a call, the call-in number is 516-387-1705. Looks like we got Sue from New Mexico in the call, listening on her phone. How you doing, Susie? Let me explain a couple more things, and I'll get into what's going on. Like I said, we got a great show, I hope. I may even have a guest. We'll see. You said he'd call, or you said he'd check in. I sent him an invite. But if you want to get in touch with G-Ski Rocks, you can get in touch with G-Ski Rocks at G-Ski Rocks at airwavesamerica.com. That's how you can email him. G-Ski Rocks at airwavesamerica.com. That's the letter G, the sport ski, and rocks as in he rocks. G-S-K-I rocks at airwavesamerica.com. So he is the man, that's for sure. If you want to get in touch with me, a couple different ways. You can find me on Facebook, probably the fastest way. Apparently, I have an email address at airwavesamerica.com. It's Dave at airwavesamerica.com. So that's what's up with that. We got a great show. So G-Ski was all set today to rock this show. And then a couple of hours ago, he said, "This is crazy." Said his daughter, who is like 6-7 months pregnant, got rushed to the hospital today, and he didn't really know what was up. He might get a new grandbaby today. So I texted back and said, hopefully they can convince that baby to calm down and cook a little longer. But that's what's up. He may or may not be able to join us. But like I said, in any case, we got it. We got you. You know, anything for my homie, because he is the man. So I found this really cool inspirational thing on TikTok. And it's this little kid talking to his mom, and I don't know exactly what all the context is. It appears like he's talking about some movie that he watched, and the character in the movie was able to do something, I just was watching it before I came on here, but it is so, I'd say the kid's maybe like 6. Anyways, just listen to this. It still makes sense.
He could do it. If he could do it.
This isn't a movie.
He believed in himself. And you can too.
Oh man, you're gonna put it on me like that?
You can do anything that you want. You can get singing lessons, get a better job, make more money. You could be even like rich. You could live in the White House someday. You could be president.
Me?
Do what you want to do. It's not up to other people.
It's true.
It's up to you. He could do it If he could do it.
I want to let that run again.
This isn't a movie.
He believed in himself. And you can do it.
Oh, man. You're going to put it on me like that?
You can do anything that you want. You can get singing lessons, get a better job, make more money. You could be even like rich. You could live in the White House someday. You could be president.
Me?
Do what you want to do. It's not up to other people.
It's true.
It's up to you.
That's just so awesome. I mean, the kid is... He believed it, and he was dispensing life advice far beyond his age, but I hope he follows it too as well. So yeah, we got a lot going on that we can talk about, but I had something lined up, and at some point I was going to discuss the three-fifths clause, and that's in the Constitution. I had somebody at work that said that there's no way that could be interpreted as abolitionist. And, you know, I kind of, you know, defended it. And then he didn't want to engage on it. So I invited him to the show, and he said he'd listen. I don't know if I'll call in. I might listen, but I don't see him on the board. We'll see. I'm not going to get going on that. If he doesn't call in by the second hour, then I'll get into what I was going to do with him. It still makes a lot of sense. I've come across some more stuff that was in my books that, you know, it's one of those things that it never gets old. It's always relevant, and it's relevant more now than ever. I was looking for something that's in the book Rules for Radicals. And there was a segment in that book that was called The Rules of Means and Ends, and it talks about different aspects of means and ends, and does the end justify the means, and that whole, you know, that whole thing is discussed and broken down. And you know, the closer one is to an event, the higher attachment they have to that event, as opposed to the further away they are. You know, it's not as important to them, type of thing. And a lot of it is observation of human nature. So it's not something that I can say, oh, look at how they think. You know, I kind of even approached it that way, but then when I step back, I was like, you know, okay, so we know the people who would read the book Rules for Radicals are in a certain mindset to begin with, and that they are studying how to take over, how to gain power, however they can, and they're pretty intricate. Well, I didn't find yet the rules for means and ends, but I will, and we'll discuss them soon. Not today. But what I did, and I think I may have visited these earlier, but, you know, it's like I said, it never gets old, is the communist socialist Rules for Revolution. And it was an understanding that an earlier version of this frightening document was first unearthed in Dusseldorf, Germany, in the early part of the year 1919. It was exposed later that year in the Bartlesville Examiner Enterprise. in the state of Oklahoma in the U.S. Also our understanding that in 1946, the Attorney General of Florida obtained a copy of a later version of the document from a member of the American Communist Party. We've also been informed that a more current version appeared in the Los Angeles Times on November 9, 1998. It has been brought to light by other concerned citizens across America. It also now periodically makes the rounds on the Internet. If you're not aware of this disturbing set of rules of engagement and conquest, or even if you have heard of it, you might wish to be reminded of it again. Here is the basic essence of what it is and what it strives to accomplish. The rules for revolution. First one is corrupt the young. Intensify their exposure to violence, sex, and drugs, and draw them away from religion. Support a greater development of all of their superficialities. A greater exposure to violence and sex and drugs. Well, they get all that in the movies. The second one is infiltrate the educational system. Become deeply involved with the educational system of the nation. It must always be remembered that one of the first things that must be done in order to take and retain control is to subvert and dominate the minds of the youth of a nation. Now we are, youth of a nation. Because that song is about teen suicide and whatnot. But anyways. The third one is get control of public communication. Infiltrate the schools of journalism. Move into the areas of management of the metropolitan newspapers and the broadcast networks. Infiltrate the motion picture industry. Yeah. enough said on that one. Next one is divide and conquer. Press for even greater divisions of the people into hostile groups. Divide them by race, nationality, sex, religion, age, financial position, culture, or anything else that can be used to create serious fractures within the social order. Ding, 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 ding. Anybody see anything wrong with that one? Now they have, well, I guess sex would be the trans issue. Yeah, anyway, okay, so the next one is destroy religion. Do all that can be done to remove religion from all public areas. Isolate all that remains and promote any competing alternatives that can be used to eliminate whatever is left. I mean, there's hundreds of court cases where people want any religious thing removed from a public square. It's not because it bothers them. It's because they're trying to push an agenda. I mean, who can be bothered by, to the degree, you know, say a cross on a certain street corner or something, the Ten Commandments or, you know, something in a school. Does that really bother you? How does it bother you? It doesn't. You're just using it to promote an agenda. The next one is use language as a weapon. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Wow. Speak of supporting democracy in the name of liberalism and stand up for what you claim as good values, but use every method possible to pervert, destroy, or take them over. Create the new order in their names. Since communism and socialism are not always labels that are appreciated as are other terms, like, and I'll just add, like progressivism. Yeah. Next one is use the gullible and idealistic. They are practically begging to be exploited in the name of whatever they feel emotionally attached. Use what they think they believe to better use them for your purposes. So that reminded me of begging to be exploited in the name of whatever they feel emotionally attached to. Use whatever they think they believe to better use them for your purposes. There's a guy on the internet on TikTok where he debates like college kids. It's not Ben Shapiro. I can't think of the guy's name. And then, you know, he just asked the question at the beginning of this. This is, you need to explain what you mean when you say toxic masculinity. And is it any different than toxic feminist, whatever that word would be? Is it different than toxic humanity? Is it different than, you know, so what is it that you're actually identifying? You have, basically what he was saying is, you have a talking point that raises an emotion and gives you a word picture. And you really don't know, and you can't define it. You don't know what it means. You can't define it. So that's all that you have to sometimes ask is, can you define that talking point? What does that mean? That's a powerful question to ask. If somebody argues a talking point, what does that mean? You know? Looks like we have a Laker fan in the chat room. Welcome. Just going through what's called the Rules for Revolution. And it's been a set of checklist for revolutionaries to on how to gain power, basically, in revolution. So the next one was incite civil disobedience. Ooh. Create labor unrest and strikes whenever possible. Promote mob demonstrations and demands for everything that will undermine the national stability. Ooh. Does that include gaslighting? I think it does. The next one is, I mean, I don't really need to say anything about that one because, you know, you can just look over the past year and see that that's been being used. It's, you know, it matches right up with what's been being used. The next one is destroy human values. You do all that you can to undermine the old moral values. Recognize personal discipline and integrity as conditions that must be eradicated. Do not forget that chaos is the goal. To reach this goal, it will be necessary to strip away all inhibitions. And somebody thought these up and wrote these things down. And to say out loud that what you need to try to do is destroy or eradicate personal discipline and integrity. That's what this one says. Recognize personal discipline and integrity as conditions that must be eradicated to reach the goal of chaos. To reach that goal, it would be necessary to strip away all inhibitions. Next one is command the political arena. Get into American politics and identify those who can be used and those who must be eliminated. Stop those who fight against the communist and socialist agenda with everything from character assassination to any other creative fictions that can be deployed to put doubt in the minds of the voters. I'm just going to read it again. Yeah, you command the political arena. Get into American politics and identify those who can be used and those who must be eliminated. Okay, what does that mean to you? I know what it means to me. What does it mean to you? Stop those who fight against the communist and socialist agenda with everything from character assassinations to any other creative, this word right here, fictions that can be deployed to put doubt in the minds of the voters. Well, there's your negative attack political ad, right? Everything from character assassination to any other creative fictions that can be deployed. Just to put doubt in the minds of the voters. But here's the thing. If anybody uses these tactics against progressives or people on the left, then they're bullies. Making them victims. No fair. The last one is apply the art of gradual reduction. So by that, it's institute all the changes necessary to reduce the freedoms and rights of the people. Sudden removal is almost never possible. Gradual removal over extended periods of time can almost always be counted on to be successful. There's the admission that they want to remove and reduce the freedoms and rights of the people. That right there. Well, you can't remove them suddenly because that'll not be possible. They won't stand for that. But if you just chip away at this one and then chip away at that one and then chip away at this one and then chip away at that one. Well. Yeah. And then when you have any evidence set of rules that I just wrote, all they do is say, no, that's a fake. You guys wrote that. That was made up by you. Well, there's your gaslighting again, you know? I mean, who do you believe? How do you believe anything? Yeah. All right. G-Ski may not be able to come. His daughter, I'm talking to a Laker fan here, said, hello, it has been a long time since I checked into G-Ski Rock Show. Glad to be back. I have no questions yet, just listening. Well, I appreciate you just listening. I'm Dave. Maybe I know you, maybe I don't. His daughter, who's about 6 or 7 months pregnant, got rushed to the hospital today. So he might be being a granddaddy right now. We'll see. I'll check in with him a little bit later and we'll see if he'll be able to join us. But that's where he is. He had every intention of being here. And I was going to have a guest and we'll see if my buddy calls in. So far he hasn't, but that's all right. You know, I invited him today, and he was intrigued by it. I don't know. Maybe he said he might listen. I told him I'd be talking about the three-fifths clause. I don't want to start talking about that until I see him on the board or something. That way I can hopefully interact with them at some, you know, to some degree. So those are my rules for revolution that I had put in my, it was in my my second book. And I came across them because I was looking for rules for means and ends, which is another set of rules from the book Rules for Radicals. In any case, that's where that stands right now. I have another thing that I'll be getting into. In the meantime, let's go through our Think for Yourself series. I might have another addition. I say you don't have to believe everything that I believe, and a matter of fact, I don't care what you believe. But if you're going to have a discussion, you do bloody well have to think for yourself. That's all I ask. Just think for yourself. Because if you come out with media narrative talking points as your argument, I will pick those off one by one. Because you know what? I know exactly what they are. Every time. I can sniff out a talking point faster than anybody. A talking point is a phrase or a word or, you know, a mental picture that has been washed through a focus group, which determines how high of is your level of is your emotional level when hearing that word or phrase or mental picture. So I can sniff those right out. So if you're gonna argue, and your argument consists of media narrative talking points, That's not gonna make it with me. Well, how do you think for yourself if all you have is media narrative bombarding you day in and day out? Well, I have some ideas. Everyone gets caught up in whatever the media tells you is the hottest thing right now. That's pretty much what goes on. Off the top of my head, some examples are that police hunt down and kill unarmed black men. You know, that was a thing for a little while. Well, that's not really how it works. If you really, really think that happens, ask yourself a couple of questions about it. What does that mean? What is the consequence of that? How many? Get some statistics. Look it up. The things you should ask are things that are knowable, not just, oh, well, I heard this on the news. That must be happening. If you come aware of any grievance of any group, did you hear about that from someone within the group, or did you hear it on somebody on behalf of that group? So I'll give you an example. Somebody has, say somebody has been pulled over for DWB. Anybody not know what that is? Driving while black. Okay. All right. Where are you hearing it? Are you hearing it from that person? Or are you hearing it from, you know, a white lady on the news talking about this? Well, here's what we found. We found somebody who got pulled over for driving while black. I'm just giving examples off the top of my head of a grievance that somebody wants to steer you to. Hey, look at this. Look at this. This happened here. Well, the implication is, well, this must be happening on a large scale. If something like this made the news, then it must be happening all over the place. Well, you got to root it out. You got to ferret out what that means. So if you're hearing about a grievance, any kind of a grievance that a group may have, but from somebody that's outside that group, the person that you're hearing it from is an agitator, period. There's no other way to put it. They're saying, hey, you guys in this group, look at the people in that group. They're suffering from this, and it's probably your fault. And meanwhile, they're above the fray, and no one ever looks at them. They're the ones causing the problem. They're the ones calling the attention to the other group. So that's one way. That's one way you can start thinking for yourself. You can ask those kinds of questions. You can start examining and noticing who's saying what about whom, and if, you know, where you're hearing the information, those types of things. What would it look like? Here's another one. What would it look like if activists got everything they wanted, on the left or the right? Now, I'll guarantee that to some degree, the images would be fairly close, but they would be opposite. If you have two people, one of them's a progressive and one of them's a conservative, and you say, okay, how would the world look if you ask a conservative, how would the world look if the progressives got everything they wanted? And they give you this dystopia picture. Well, then you ask the progressive, if the conservatives got everything they want, everything they wanted, what would it look like? Well, to them, they would give you the same dystopian picture of the world. It would be fascism. It would be, there'd be no freedoms. There'd be, everybody would be in jail or whatever. You'd be, and then, so you have to be kind of aware that the other side thinks the same thing about me, that softens your outlook a little bit. If you just kind of look at that, okay, well, it wouldn't really look that way unless, a lot of other things happen. So that's just a little game you can play with it's a little word game or a little thought game. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm trying to say. A little thought game you can play. So, working my way up to my newest idea that I have on this. I'm just going to kind of recap the top, all the rest of them. Which would you rather be looked at, stereotyped as a group, or would you like to be looked at as an individual? If you're okay with being stereotyped as a group, in whatever group you belong to or you claim is yours, I guess that's fine. Myself, I would rather be looked at as an individual because there's really only one group that I fit into, and that's the Dave Graham group. there's only one of me, and that's where I fit. I'll have differences with every other group out there. No matter what the overlaps are, there'll be differences. But there's only one perfect that I fit into, and that's kind of like my own little group. Can't help it. And actually, the same thing goes for everybody because everybody is an individual. Everybody is different. You can't really fit into a group. So that's another little thought experiment. You got to ask yourself, what group are you in? Well, I don't know if I'm in any group, but if I was, I know which ones it wouldn't be. Oh. All right. So I talked a little bit about the talking points and breaking those down, and you got to sniff those out. When you hear the same word or phrase from, two or three different sources, you can bet that has been washed through a focus group. And they have deduced that the highest emotional level can be reached by this word and that word together, whatever it is. I remember in the Obama years, he kept repeating the words millionaires and billionaires, millionaires and billionaires. And another one was corporate jet owners. I think I did a show back in the day about talking points and stuff. And whenever they have two or three different sources using the exact same, maybe they put their own inflection on it, but it's the exact same two words, three words, Russian collusion, Russian collusion, Russian collusion. Quid pro quo, quid pro quo, quid pro quo. I don't know what it means, but it sounds bad, But so, well, I A Laker fan just agreed with me. I appreciate that. I don't want to be viewed as a group. Everyone is different. Look at me as a unique individual. Exactly. That's my point. And Annie from Southern Sense has now just joined us. How are you, Annie? Great to see you. Haven't talked to you for a while. This is Dave from the Dave and G-Ski Rock Show from Stay Mad Radio. I'm not G, but G may not be joining us. He's I mentioned it earlier. Here's his daughter, who's like 6 or 7 months pregnant, got rushed to the hospital. So he might be being a granddaddy again. He might get a new grandbaby tonight. So I'm kind of like taking the reins of the show for right now. And but it is great to see you there. I remember Annie from Southern Sense. Absolutely. So I'm going to get back to my Think for Yourself segment. And I started talking points. You know, if you hear a talking point that you've heard the same word or phrase in 2 or 3 different sources, it's been watched through a focus group just for emotional heighten emotions. That's what I'm trying to say. So obviously I'm not a pro at this. But we're getting there. I don't know. I'm not even really trying to get there. I'm just, just here talking to you guys. So, but anyways, what to do when you come across a talking point is ask, you know, what does it mean? Somebody starts arguing a talking point, or a media narrative talking point, you can just ask, what does it mean? Walk me through it. What do you see? What do you see when you hear that phrase? What do you see in your head? What does it look like? And that's a pretty powerful thing, because, you know, it's like the guy that asked the girl that accused him of toxic masculinity. He says, "Well, what does that mean? What does that mean? What do you see when you see that? You can't define that. It's just an emotional thing. You know, is it different than toxic femininity. I don't know how to even say it. How would I say that? Masculinity? Femininity? I'm trying to figure that one out. Or the other one, which is much easier to say. Is it different than toxic humanity? But anyways, you know, when you pin somebody down, ask them what it looks like. So moving on, we've talked about these in the past, but I like to always hit them, because when I add another one, I want to kind of like lay the foundation and go back through some of these again. So if you are a fan of one man, one vote democracy, which is really, you know, the more they, how many times has everybody said, "Oh, we live in our democracy is this, and we need this for our democracy, or our democracy is in danger, or our democracy, our democracy, our democracy." We're in a constitutional republic. The only thing democratic that was set up by the founders as democratic was our U.S. House representatives every 2 years. There's your democracy right there. And every 2 years, you get to change your mind if you don't like the guy, the last guy. That's the democracy. Unfortunately, now senators are democratically elected also. I mean, with one person, one vote. Oh. Well, my condolences to Annie. I did see on Facebook she lost her husband, and so they're having trouble finishing that up because of the hurricane. So, but I'm glad it was a beautiful mass. Thanks for sharing that with me, Annie. Anyway, so here we go. democracy, the one man, one vote. So here's what you have to ask yourself, to think for yourself. You have to ask yourself, are you comfortable with any group voting on your natural rights? That's what you have to ask yourself, to think for yourself. Because it will, even if you agree, with what the vote, the direction of the vote, let's say that you love free speech but don't like the Second Amendment, and through a majority, which is 50% of the population plus one person, through that kind of a majority vote, you are able to vote out the Second Amendment because you think guns are bad, but you like free speech. Well, the next time people get together, there might be the next thing on the chopping block might be your free speech. Are you comfortable with 50% of the population plus one voting on your right to, for free speech? And don't forget, this is going to depend on who shows up to vote. So of the people who show up to vote, 50% plus one, everything is on the chopping block. And Bigfoot's with us now. Thank you, Bigfoot, for coming in. Yeah, they don't like the Second Amendment because they fear it and the power it secures for we the people. Absolutely, Annie. Yep. So here's another think for yourself aspect. You can look at history and you can, I mean, all history. History doesn't start today. All history is there to be learned from. And you should be able to see through cursory search parallels regarding human nature and the consolidation of power. Whenever power gets consolidated to a small group or to a person, tyranny. That's the answer. That's what happens, because they have to hold on to their power. No one is going to willingly give up their power. It has to be taken. Whenever power is consolidated, you get tyranny. And without fail, it's just the nature and the human nature of consolidation of power. They say power corrupts. And absolute power corrupts. Absolutely. Had my son look that one up yesterday. He says, that sounds like a quote. I said, yep. I said, Lord Acton, look it up. And he whips out his phone and he, oh, yeah, I can see that. In 18th century such and such, and he gave me the whole bio of the guy. Most notable for his quote of saying, power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So, so the newest thing that I've added to this, and if you, like I said, if you have any ideas on how to, you know, really distill an idea down on how to get somebody to think for themselves, please send it over to me. Send it to G-Ski, and we'll put it on this list, because I'd like 3 pages of this stuff. And right now I, you know, have what I've read so far. But here's the newest one. And, you know, hopefully you'll follow me on this. I say people will tend to believe what they want to believe. People will tend to believe what they want to believe. Begs the question, why would they want to believe that America sucks? Why would you want to believe that? If you're going to believe what you want to believe. So if I get in a debate with somebody about the American exceptionalism, you know, well, when was it great? When was this? When was that? Yes, you can find plenty of warts. Absolutely. But those are not the only things that you can look at. You can choose to look at the good things. You know, you can choose to look at all the advances that have been made in so many different areas. Why do you latch on to the things that you see that make you think America sucks? And there's, you know, it sucks to the exclusion of any other redeeming factors. Anyway, that's the latest thing that I added to it. Well, and I'll wait till the second hour. I'm going to get into this three-fifths clause, and I'll get into it in the second hour. So that's kind of what I had going on, and here's what I wrote in actually in my second book, Reality is Not Optional. The name of the chapter, chapter 4, it's called It's the Poison, Stupid. number one, the culture rot. The global elite is leftist. Leftists succumb to the sins of the flesh. They have so much money that nothing stimulates them anymore, so they turn to the dark side. Leftists have the idea that with all their influence, they can change the world because they know more than anyone how people should live. Well, these are the ones with a decent motive. Some are more blatant in their power grabbing. So, one of the things that I wrote about here was the sins of the flesh, which is found in the Bible, Galatians 5, verses 16 to 21. And this is what it says, verse 16. This I say then, walk in the Spirit, and ye shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. For the flesh lusteth against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh. And these are contrary the one to the other, so that ye cannot do the things that ye would. But if ye be led of the Spirit, ye are not under the law. Verse 19, now works of the flesh are manifest with, which are these: adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, variance, emulations, wrath, strife, seditions, heresies, envyings, murders, drunkenness, revelings, such the like of the which I tell you before, as I have also told you in time past, that they which do such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. So the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these: manifest, made known, means made known, thus conspicuous before the eyes of men, so that all men can see for themselves, which are these. That is, these in the list belong to the class called the flesh. These are like dictionary definitions. It seems that the sins here mentioned fall into four groups. Sensuation, number one, sensuation, fornication, uncleanness, and lasciviousness. Number two, unlawful things in the spiritual realm, like idolatry and sorcery. And number three, forms of discord, enmity, strife, jealousies, wrath, factions, divisions, parties, envyings, and intemperate excess. This is the fourth one. Drunkenness, reveling, and so I'll go back to the first one here. It says the word fornication refers to sexual immorality in general, uncleanness, physical and material dirt, ritual and unceremonial impurity. It also indicates moral impurity, which is inconsistent with personal purity. Lavishness. Definition is unbridled lust, excess, licentiousness, lavishness, wantonness, outrageousness, shamelessness, insolence. That's just the first one. Number two, unlawful things in the spiritual realm. Idolatry may also be defined as anything that comes between man and God, or better yet, anything that occupies the place in the heart of man that God should occupy. That was the idolatry / sorcery. So here's one that you'll see being used a lot. It's the third one, the third category, the forms of discord. So enmity, strife, jealousness, wrath, factions, divisions, parties, envyings. The word translated enmity has been translated by a variety of words such as hatred, enmity, quarreling, hostile, hostility, feud, mutual enmity, etc. To hate indicates maliciousness. Malicious and unjustifiable feelings towards others, whether toward the innocent or by mutual animosity. Enmity is the state or attitude of mind toward other people, and strife is the outcome in actual life of that state of mind. Jealousy may have either a good or bad connotation depending on the context. To observe achievements of another, it can stir within one the desire to emulate or imitate with a view to achieving the same worthwhile thing in oneself. But if the same ambition, good at first, should provoke to a bitter resentment, then zealous becomes a work of the flesh. Jealousy, I guess, becomes a work of the flesh. Wrath is another one. In this case, is very violent, but very brief. The Greek said this wrath is like a fire in the straw, blazing quickly up and just as quickly burning itself out. Wrath is used, as it is here used, is not long-cherished anger. It is the blaze of a temper which flares into violent words and deeds and just as quickly dies. The word faction is defined as strife, contention in the expression of enmity. In other words, that are used, strife, selfishness, selfish ambitious, ambitions, intrigues, and rivalry. The word divisions. William Barclay says the word denotes a state of things in which men are divided, in which feuds flourish, and in which unity is destroyed. Parties. Other translations translate the word by heresies, party, spirit, party, quarrels, and factions. W.E. Vine says it denotes a choosing, a choice. Then that which is chosen, and hence an opinion, especially a self-willed opinion, which is substituted for submission to the power of truth, and leads to division and the formation of sects, parties. Yeah. Substituted. So especially a self-willed opinion, which is substituted for submission to the power of truth and leads to division and the formation of sects. All right. Envy has been defined as a feeling of displeasure and ill will because of another's advantages, honor, possessions, etc. Envy. Millionaires and billionaires, you should envy them. Number four, the intemperate excess, drunkenness, reveling. such like things, it should be obvious that this long list falls short of the infinite varieties of sin. Oh, well, those are the sins of the flesh, and with a little breakdown of what that is. So, when I come back, coming up to the top of the hour, when I come back, I am going to begin the three-fifths clause and I'll set it up with the guy that kind of inspired it. I'll walk him through. He may be listening. I don't know. I just don't see him on any boards. So if he is, give us a call, Mark, if you're listening. Would like a little bit of interaction if possible. Like I said, it'll be respectful. It'll be professional. And at any time you can drop off if you don't agree. All right. Anyways. So, here's what I'm going to do. We're going to hit a couple of these promos, and when we come back, we'll get right into that. And again, if anybody does want to call in, 516-387-1705, we'll hit your number one button on your keypad, and we'll bring you on, and we can chat. I've been going through a whole bunch of things that I've hit these things before, but every time, everything I see out there, it's like, oh yeah, that's part of that. You know, as far as the think for yourself, or as far as, you know, some of the other things that are like talking points, or all the things that I just was going on about. So in the meantime, I'm going to see if I can get in touch with G-Ski, find out how he's doing. And in the meantime, we got a couple promos. We'll be right back.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
To protect her home and family in a disaster, Karen was willing to wade through water, mud, and insurance paperwork.
Yeah, I can do this.
You go, Karen! By simply understanding and updating what her insurance covers and doesn't cover now, she'll be better prepared no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
Good evening.
Well, I used to eat bacon, 'cause I like the way it tastes. Now I eat it for jihadis, just to say in your face,
I eat
bacon, wrapped in bacon, rolled in bacon bits.
Do
it's you. I eat bacon wrapped in bacon, 'cause I like it. It's a bonus that it offends you. You see what I'm trying to say, Abdul? I'd rather you got over yourself. Put an end to all this righteous indignation. Have some bacon and enjoy it. We can all get along. And from war enjoy permanent vacation.
Me, I kill you.
You're listening to Renaissance Radio on Airwaves America with Dave and GC Rock.
I am Conor McGregor, multiple weight MMA champion. I'm a fighter and I've been through many battles in the octagon. Many consider my fights in the octagon heroic, but the real life heroes are those men and women who fight to protect us every day. The real life fighters, the real life heroes, are the firefighters and police officers. These first responders are true heroes because these brave men and women put themselves in the line of danger every single day protecting us all. The Tunnel to Towers Foundation ensures that first responders from fire, EMS and police departments who are killed in the line of duty with young children have a home without the burden of a mortgage. They are my heroes. They need our help today. I'd like to ask you to join me in donating $11 a month to support their efforts. Your $11 a month honors and supports our first responders. Please call now at 1-844-BRAVEST or visit tunneltotowers.org.
I thought that was an intro that introed me, actually. Also, I guess I'll do it myself. Well, welcome back to the Dave and G-Ski Rock Show. If you want to give us a call, the call-in number is 516-387-1705. Call-in number is 516-387-1705. We've been talking about a lot of things. I've been going back through some of the lists minutes of Rules for Revolution and talking about them, talking about the Think for Yourself series, getting jiggy with it. That's what we're doing. It's all good. It's all gravy, and we love gravy. That's what G-Ski would say if he was here. He's not here. Like I've mentioned, if you're just joining us, he texted me about an hour and a half before the show, maybe 2 hours before the show. This is crazy. His daughter's like 6 or 7 months pregnant. And she had just gotten rushed to the hospital. They don't know if he's having a grandbaby or not. But anyways, we're holding down the fort because we can do it. That's what we do. That's how we do what we do. Another G-Ski Rock saying. And we're on and popping, and it's crack-a-lacking. I'm trying to think of all the other G-Ski-isms that I can inject into the show to keep his spirit alive in the Dave and G-Ski Rock show. Lick spittle. No, wait a minute. That was mine. Doesn't really apply to anything I was talking about. I think it's a funny word. All right. So I'm going to dive right in. The other day I was talking, something in the office that I work at a post office. Something said that had me, I didn't remember how it started, but my buddy, who's a progressive, self-proclaimed, he has progressive values. No offense, but to me, that's an oxymoron, because there's really no value in some of the things that they stand for to me. And that's, that's where we disagree. We're cordial with each other. But I don't, I don't let him get away with arguing media narrative talking points. And one of the things he said was, there's no way the 3/5 clause in the Constitution can be read to be abolitionist. And he said, you have to stretch 6 ways to Sunday to get that. In other words, he believes the media narrative talking point that the 3/5 clause was in the Constitution to indicate that slaves equaled only 3/5 of a person. My contention is that the 3/5 clause is abolitionist in nature. He said it's not. And I thought about it all day, and debating somebody with whom you don't agree on the same set of facts is pointless. Debating somebody who, after you make your case, then says, yeah, I don't believe that, there's no point in it. So I thought about this new idea for a debate style, if you will. And I invited him this morning. I said, hey, I'm going to be talking about the 3/5 clause. And if you're interested in any of that discussion, I'd like to actually invite you to be a guest on the show. And we can, you can interact to whatever degree you want to. What I envisioned being able to do was, I lay out what I believe as a fact. And if somebody else would like to call in and play along with this works a whole lot easier if I have an interaction, this particular style. I lay out a fact, and you either agree that that's a fact or you disagree that's a fact. And you see how many things that you can lay out until they say, okay, I don't agree that that's a fact. Okay, then we're done here. You know, we made it quite a ways. Oh, we didn't. We made it to the first question, and there's no point in going any further. Whenever there is a disagreement on what a fact is, there's really no point debating. There's really no discussion going on. So if somebody can just give me a call. I got some people in the chat room. Maybe you can give me a call. 516-387-1705. This would work a whole lot better. And again, the other thing that will end it is if somebody says, "Yeah, I just don't believe that." Well, it can't help what you believe. You're going to believe what you want to believe. I don't know why you want to believe, what that is, whatever it is. But in any case, here's where I was going to start, because I just jotted down a few facts, and I phrase them in a form of a question, as in, do you agree or disagree? First of all, the dates 1776 and 1787, those years should be significant to anybody that knows the founding at all. 1776 was the Declaration of Independence. 1787 was the ratification of the Constitution. So my first fact that I was going to lay out is this. Between 1776 and 1787, slavery as an institution existed. Fact? Yes or no? It's hard to say no to that one. So I'll have to extrapolate and speculate and channel. So it's kind of like a flow chart type of thing, you know. And any one of these that answers no, that's where it stops. If anyone answers yes, we go to the next one. So let's assume that everybody can agree that between 1776 and 1787, slavery as an institution existed. Yes. Next box. In that same time frame, there were free states and slave states. Yes or no? Because if you don't agree with that, we're done. If you do agree that that's a fact, that during 1776 and 1787, there were free states and there were slave states. That's pretty cut and dry to me. Again, if there's any discussion on that, we'll have any discussion you want to have on that. But on its face, there were free states and there were slave states. If you say yes, we go to the next box. And this next one is a, for the most part, the northern states were the free states and the southern states were the slave states. Fact? Yes or no? For the most part, the northern states were the free states. The southern states were the slave states. That's pretty common knowledge, I think. And, I mean, don't ask me to name what states were what. I don't have that off the top of my head. It's knowable. You know, you can look it up. I don't need to look it up for the purposes of this discussion. So far, we agree that between 1776 and 1787, slavery as an institution existed. And during the time of 1776 and 1787, there existed free states and slave states. And that, for the most part, it was the northern states that were the free states and the southern states that were the slave states. So if you're with me on that, we've got three boxes checked yes so far. And we're laying a very good groundwork to move forward with more facts to lay out. How about this one? The next one is the northern states and the southern states were divided on the issue of slavery. Yes or no? If you don't think so, then we can be done. And again, maybe that should be a, for the most part, type of a fact laid out. I'm sure there were other things, you know, with trade and politics going on. I'm sure there were other things that divided that. But the main issue was when free states disagreed with slavery. That's why they didn't have slavery. And the southern states disagreed with the free states because they were saying, no, there's nothing wrong with slavery. Look at how good we have it here. We live in a lap of luxury. You could too. Just get some slaves. The problem was that slavery goes against natural law, even as it says in the Declaration of Independence, where it says all men are created equal. It doesn't mean men as in males. It means mankind. So now, let's explore this next one that says 3/5 clause in the U.S. Constitution refers to how slaves would be counted in the census as it relates to apportionment. Yes or no? That's my understanding of that fact right there. Anybody got anything? No objections. Apportionment refers to, according to the census, the number of U.S. representatives a state is allowed. That's what apportionment refers to. Yes or no? Okay. So far we agree that between 1776 and 1787, slavery as an institution existed. And during that same time, 1776 to 1787, there were free states and slave states. And for the most part, northern states were the free states and the southern states were the slave states. And that the issue of slavery is what divided the northern states and the southern states. We also agree, parallel to all that groundwork that we laid out, 3/5 clause in the Constitution refers to how slaves would be counted in the census as it relates to apportionment, and that apportionment refers to, according to the census, the number of U.S. representatives a state is allowed. I'll have some questions in a minute, but the higher a state's population, counted in the census, the more representatives they would be allowed. The Constitution lays out a number for every so many a state is afforded one representative. I mean, that's since been changed to limit the total number of representatives in the House of Representatives to, was it 435? So in other words, if somebody gains a House member, that means somebody else lost one. That's what that means. So they capped the number of representatives at 435. That's the current procedure of how that's done. Before they had too many of them, there'd be a million representatives in the House if they followed exactly what was the numbers that was said in the same. Every 3,000 or 3,500 people or something like that, you get to have a representative. I don't know what the number is, but there'd be a lot more. The Congress would be a lot bigger than it is. So, and they realized that. So at some point, so they just made a cap. We will never go over 435. If it's not, you can feel free to correct me. I just don't know it off the top of my head. Not important to me for my point. Anyways, if Now, if one state gains a rep, that means another state lost a rep. So that's how that works. So, but in any case, the higher the state's population, the more representatives they're granted, they're allowed. So, if here's a question. Now, just a couple of quick little questions at this juncture. And feel free to let me know how, what you think of my my debate technique. I have hopefully gotten somebody to agree on a set of facts that we can now ask questions about. Well, here's my first question. If slaves were counted one for one, would they have benefited from the extra representation? In other words, instead of counting three-fifths all other people and then using that number to apportion representatives, if they were counted one for one, that number would be bigger. They would get extra representation. I don't know how many. It's knowable. It can be looked up, I suppose. And it depends on the year that we're talking about and different variables. But would the slaves have benefited from the extra representation? That's a question. Yes or no? Whatever that answer is. If you think that they would have benefited from extra representation, I'll then have to ask, and I'll ask it anyways, whether you do or you don't, did slaves have access to voting? Yes or no? I think we all kind of know that they did not. So if they were counted one for one and they had access to voting, then they would have benefited from the extra representation. But since they weren't the recipients of the benefit from extra representation, to whom would that benefit be awarded? Who collects the benefit from extra representation? Slaves didn't have access to voting. Who voted? Well, it would be the landowners, the slave owners themselves. So if you had a guy that had 100 slaves, it would be like he gets 100 votes. Well, that's not right. On its face, that's not right. The way it originally worked was the census was designed to capture population counts for two purposes. The first purpose, of course, as we discussed, was for the apportionment of representatives. The second was for the amount of tax the state would pay. So at first, the southern states didn't want their slaves counted for tax purposes, but they wanted them counted for apportionment purposes. And of course the northern states that were, you know, that they were wrestling with, they wanted exactly the opposite, you know. That's why it's called a three-fifths compromise. That's why it's referred to as a compromise. So nobody got everything they wanted. So because the North didn't want to count the slaves, because if they counted them, they would get the extra tax money, but they would also be giving extra representation to slave states. So they came up with this three-fifths idea. Now we've identified, hopefully we've kind of agreed that if slaves were counted one for one, they would not be the beneficiary of the extra representation because they did not have access to voting. And who would be the recipient of that benefit of the extra representation if they were counted one for one would have been their masters or the, you know, other landowners or other, you know, whoever else did have access to voting. So they came up with the three-fifths idea. Now, in that regard, who presented the three-fifths idea? Was it the North states or the Southern states? If you don't know, let's explore. By the way, it was the Northern states. But why would the South present an idea that would cost them representation? And by the way, if the South, I'm talking to Mark right now, if the South presented the three-fifths idea, I would agree that it was racist. They would say, yeah, well, they're really only worth three-fifths of a person, so we should only give them three-fifths of a count. Well, that would be a racist intent if it was presented by the South, which it wasn't. But I would have to concede that the three-fifths clause was racist and white supremacist. It was presented by the South, which it wasn't. So, it was presented by the North because they didn't want heavier representation from the Southern states. Because, here's my next question. Would more representatives from the Southern states helped to shorten or prolong the institution of slavery? If you had more representatives from Southern states because their slaves were counted one-to-one and they got more representation, would it have shortened or prolonged slavery? That's a question. Shorten or prolong? I say if you had more representatives from slave states, they would be inclined to enact legislation that would have prolonged it and protected it as much as they, because they're representatives of the people who elected them. Well, who elected them? Their buddies, the slave owners. I think I hinted on this, but now I'll get back to facts, yes or no. The North didn't want to count slaves at all for the census, and the South wanted the full count initially. It was before the three-fifths compromise was. So they're kind of already established and touched on that. The North didn't want to count slaves at all for the census, but the South wanted the full count because they wanted the representation. And they knew if they had the representation, their livelihoods would be protected. So, yes or no? If you think no, then we're going to have to be done. And if you think yes, we can proceed to the next one. The North needed the power of the Southern states against the British. Yes or no? That's a sentence, a statement. The North needed the power of the South, of all the Southern states, slave or free, whatever. They needed the power of the population mounted against the British. So they had to ally with them somehow. They had to compromise somehow because they needed the power of all that population against the British. What I say is a yes. The South was actually still doing business with Britain in at least the cotton industry. And they really didn't need to be in the North's stupid club because they were pro-slavery and they were doing business with Britain and they didn't need the North. They didn't need the North, who was actually, you know, standing up to Britain. Britain was supplying slave ships and whatnot. So the South, you know, they really didn't need to ally against Britain, but they did want access to the northern states. They wanted access for trade purposes. They wanted access for, you know, to expand whatever they could. So that's what I say. I call it a stupid club. It's a union. I call it a stupid club from the southern state's point of view, but from the northern point of view, it was, you know, the union. It was, they wanted to have united states and present a united front against Britain. That's what they wanted to do. But they wanted the unity to be around individual liberty and capitalism. They wanted it to be freedom. They wanted it to be liberating. They came up with that compromise. Let's look at the compromise. Here's what it says. Article 1, Constitution. Article 1, Section 9, Clause 1. The migration or importation of such persons as any of the states now existing shall think proper to admit, comma, shall not be prohibited by the Congress prior to the year 1808. But a tax or duty may be imposed on such importation, not exceeding $10 for each person. So right in the Constitution, it stated that within like 20 years, we're going to start taxing the importation of these guys. I'm going to try to break it down. Section 9 states that prior to 1808, Congress may not prohibit the importation of any persons a state thinks it proper to admit. But after 1808, a $10 tax per person may be levied. Now, in today's dollars, I found a conversion. In today's dollars, that's $213.65. On top of whatever the price of the air quotes person was. So at the time, there weren't, I mean, sure, they were rich people and, people who could afford the $213 or whatever, the $10 per person tax, but not to the degree, I'm thinking off the top of my head, that was before the Industrial Revolution, where what people who are known as the robber barons, we should get into that sometime too, but they were like ridiculously wealthy. The Rockefellers with oil, Ford with the cars, Carnegie with steel. These guys were like ridiculously wealthy. They were unbelievably wealthy. So to people like that, or like today, Zuckerberg or whatever, the extra $213 per person, money is absolutely, absolutely no object. But this is before all that happened. Sure, there were people with big cotton farms and stuff like that, big farming things, and they had a lot of people. They made a lot of money, but it wouldn't have been, I don't think, it would not have been every person that owned slaves would be able to afford the $10 tax on, levied on them. So I think that tax, I mean, that's just written in the Constitution before anything else. Kind of started going to make it difficult or even prohibitive to import new persons after 1808, which is like 20 years hence from the adoption of the Constitution. So that doesn't take into account that in 1800, Thomas Jefferson, who was the president, signed into law that it is illegal to import slaves. He's the one that wrote that, Thomas Jefferson.
The slave owner, the white racist, nationalist, whatever.
He's the one that signed it into law that it's illegal. And if I'm not mistaken, it even carried the death penalty if you were caught bringing in people from other countries to sell as slaves. So there you go. Thomas Jefferson, the author, for the most part, of the Declaration of Independence. Signs into law 8 years before the Constitution provision takes place that it's illegal to import slaves. All right. So now, when I was looking at this stuff up, of course they had to mention that the interstate slave trade started taking off, but no new people were coming in. By then, there was enough slaves, and you know, already inside the borders that they could now, you know, they can now move around and sell, you know, across state lines and stuff like that, except for in the free states where they weren't allowed to purchase slaves legally. So that I thought was interesting. Hopefully that's kind of the end of the, that's all I got. Let's put it that way, as far as debate things. So looks like I got somebody here on the line. Yeah, what's up? We will check it out and bring on whoever this is on the line that popped up their button. This is Dave and the G-Ski Rock Show. Who do we got?
Hey, how's it going today?
Going well.
Yeah, no, I was came on first time, and
super.
You gave me information that I didn't realize Thomas Jefferson, who is my, I'm not named after, but I like to think that I am. My name is Thomas. He's one of my favorite, John or Thomas, one of the two, Thomas or John Adams, they were both awesome. But yeah, that he actually made laws that it's illegal to, and at the same time, you know, I read on PBS.org, if you look up the transatlantic slave trade, there were only, I think 370,000 total from 1500s to 1860 slaves that were actually brought to the United States. And so some of those were brought by French, Spanish, before the United States even existed, by
right.
Portuguese. So mm-hmm. really, when the United States became a country, a small fraction were brought to the United States. Most of the slaves were procreated.
Right, yep.
I mean, the slaves were, they were going to business. I guess they didn't have TVs and too much activity, so they were, you know, they were doing the procreation thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. So let me just read it. I just put a link up in the chat room. It says, let's see here. It reads section 9, which I read already. It was, be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled, that from and after the first day of January 1880, it shall not be lawful to import or bring into the United States or the territories thereof from any foreign kingdom, place, or country, any Negro, mulatto, or person of color with intent to hold, sell, or dispose of such Negro, mulatto, or person of color as a slave or to be held to service or labor. The law had 10 sections, and that was the first section. That was The law finally passed both houses of Congress in March 2, 1807, and Jefferson signed it into law March 3, 1807. So it's not, it wasn't 1800, it was 1807, 1 year before the 1808 constitutional prohibition went.
And then 4 years later, we went to war again with England.
Yeah.
And that's when I believe the United States was infiltrated. I believe, unfortunately, we were infiltrated by the enemy of the British, and they the reason why the 14th Amendment was enacted after the slavery was actually brought to an end. I think the whole thing is a big everybody is so ignorant to it today that the white man is just a terrible creature, and everybody should despise and hate us. But they just use it to get things that they want. You know, that's their way of getting things. And
absolutely.
Yeah, it's pretty pathetic.
That's one of the things I do on this show is expose all of their tactics and you know, all of their techniques, because it's all about gaining power. That is the sole purpose of what everything that they do. And
exactly.
Yeah, so anything, you know, anything that they circle the wagons on, it's ultimately a way for them to gain power or to hold on to power. You know, for example, look at Hunter Biden's laptop. Well, in order to hang on to power, they had to all unite in discrediting that, or you know, poo-pooing it, or you know, shouting it down, or discrediting it. So that was how they were holding on to power.
Right. Because you know, the 14th Amendment was the worst thing that occurred to the United States in its existence. That was the true tyranny against the citizen of the United States. The 14th Amendment was truly, the vote was taken away from the Senate and of the people that voted no. It took 5 years to ratify, and Texas was the last state to agree, and they really had a tough time doing so. This is why we're in the mess we are today, if you truly understand and see the mess that we're in. Once tyranny occurs, you have another power. We're another power. We're not even the United States anymore. I call us the tyranny state of the United States. Truthfully, I've come to the conclusion that we are now under tyranny, and until we get rid of the 14th Amendment, this is why we have the business and everything else going on against us.
All right, so I'm looking at the 14th Amendment right now. I have the section 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. What section? Because I'm not going to be okay, but I'm not going to be somebody who says, oh yeah, so well, of course. I'd like to kind of drill down and find out which parts, because this was the. The 14th Amendment is the one that gave slaves the right to vote or something.
Gave them the right to be a citizen. Yeah, gave them citizenship.
Right. Okay. All persons born and naturalized in the United States, subject to jurisdiction thereof, are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction equal protection of the laws. So this amendment is brought up with as it relates to, for lack of a better term, anchor babies.
Exactly.
There are people who argue that because someone is born here, that they're a citizen, and then that citizenship extends to the people who gave birth to them, whether they were citizens or not. I actually don't agree with that aspect of it, and I think the 14th Amendment was misinterpreted in that sense.
Oh, it's misinterpreted. Exactly. And that's the word they use to say that it is what they say it is in terms of Anchor being born here. It says they say the corrupt tyrannists of today that started when the 14th Amendment was ratified. It's continued since then. Yeah, they say it depends how you interpret it. So no, you can't have any law or anything in a constitution. It's English, and if you read it, you understand it, and that's what it says, and that's what it means.
All right, so let's.
But they use the word.
We'll finish this up.
But what I mean is, it doesn't even exist. It's a zero, because the people said no. Everybody voted against the 14th Amendment. See, the government, the new union, the radical Republicans told them that if they did not vote in the 14th Amendment, that they will lose congressional, they would have lost congressional representation to the government of the Constitution.
I'm not following you on that. So I know there was some hanky-panky in the 16th Amendment.
They threatened them.
Right, but I know there was...
And the southern states.
I know there was some funky business with the 16th Amendment, which is the income tax one, where it didn't really pass, but they just all said it did, so they kind of made it law. But I wasn't aware of any controversy.
It's all tyranny. Because of the 14th Amendment, the original tyranny, you're going to get tyranny. That's why you have sanctuary cities. That's why you have open borders. That's why you have elections that are stolen today.
Mm-hmm.
It's all due to the 14th Amendment, didn't it? Big business took over. Big business and radical politicians.
Walk me through how the 14th Amendment is related to what you're talking. I don't disagree with what you're saying. As far as, you know, we're living in a tyranny right now, or that elections are being stolen and the big business is running everything. So where in the 14th Amendment? And again, I'm not doubting you. I'm just saying walk me through it. Because
I understand. Well, I mean, if you go to just pull up on a search engine, go 14th Amendment forced.
Forced?
And probably the first one will be week four. Yeah, 14th Amendment forced. Was forced, and probably maybe Wikipedia comes up, and within the first paragraph of Wikipedia, it'll say that Congress, the government, forced the states, in particular, they'll say the southern states, because they'll use that as an excuse, but it was the northern states as well that voted no against giving ex-slave citizenship. So what they'll say is it was due to it was more or less the South, because what we did is since the South seceded from the Union, that was their way of getting back into the Union, was to abide by the law or abide by that one thing that the Congress said, that if they don't vote in the 14th Amendment, they will never have congressional representation.
And they believed them.
It took 5 years. They gave him the middle finger,
okay,
a number of states. And then eventually they all gave in.
It was adopted July 9, 1868. The Reconstruction Amendments, often considered the most consequential amendments, that address citizenship rights, protection of the law, The amendment's first section includes several causes of due process clause, prohibit state and local. Radical Republicans who advanced the 13th Amendment hoped to ensure broad civil and human rights for the newly freed people, but its scope was disputed even before it even went into effect. The framers of the 14th Amendment wanted these principles enshrined in the Constitution to protect the new Civil Rights Act from being declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court, also to prevent a future Congress from altering it by a mere majority vote. section was also in response to violence against black people within the southern states. The Joint Committee on Reconstruction found that only a constitutional amendment could protect black people's rights and welfare within those states. The U.S. Supreme Court stated in Shelley versus Kramer that historical context leading to the 14th Amendment adoption must be taken into account, that this historical context reveals the amendment's fundamental purpose, and that the provisions of the amendment are to be construed in light of this fundamental purpose. In its decision, the court said...
I don't know what you're looking at, but in the first paragraph on Wikipedia of the 14th Amendment, it'll say that the Union told that they would lose congressional representation.
One of the Reconstruction Amendments, often considered the most consequential, it addresses citizenship rights. Okay. Equal protection of the law was proposed in response to issues related to former slaves following the American Civil War. The amendment was bitterly contested, particularly by the states defeated Confederacy, which were forced to ratify it in order to regain representation in Congress. The amendment, particularly its first section, is one of the most litigated parts of the Constitution, forming the basis for landmark Supreme Court decisions such as Brown v. Board of Education regarding racial segregation, Roe v. Wade regarding abortion, Bush v. Gore regarding the 2000 presidential election, and Obergefell v. Hodges regarding same-sex marriages. The amendment limits the action of all state and local officials, and also those acting on behalf of such officials. Okay.
It was forced by the Union that the South, but it was not only the South. It was the majority country said no. But see, they used the South as a scapegoat to say that it was primarily the South, and that was the only way that they were going to be able to rejoin the Union because they seceded from the Union, thus because of the Civil War, and it's all a bunch of BS. And they're still citizens of the United States, even though they seceded. They tried to secede as a country, as a land. They're still U.S. citizens, and it's not a way that you create citizens by telling them they must. So if today, if you have somebody, say, wanting to be a citizen, then the Congress can say, well, you have to vote this way for us to allow you to enter the Union. If you don't vote this way, then this is your punishment, or this is your what you have to do. You have to lose this particular right and vote this way, or else you will not be a citizen. No, it's not how things work.
Not in a representative republic, no. Well,
so that was it, man. It was tyranny.
Yeah, that's the point. I got nothing. I'm not gonna. I don't disagree.
And that's why
I wasn't aware of that. There's a lot of things. It's not just that. There's a ton of things.
Well, no, because everything stems from it.
Not the 14th Amendment.
I believe in it. I believe that is the case.
I know, but I've done a ton of research, and I've written two books, and I can give you many. And the 14th Amendment doesn't even come up how we got here. So there's plenty of things that contribute to how we got here.
Okay, well, give me number one. Give me your number one reason, or number one biggest thing that you say is the reason how we ended up here.
The Frankfurt School in critical theory, the development of critical theory. The Frankfurt School in Germany, where after the communist revolution didn't work the way they wanted it, they got all their intellectual people into gather in Germany. And start a university, and figure out how to make their communist revolution work all around the world. Well, the ideology wasn't exported to us, because when Hitler
What year was that roughly around? What year would you say this?
1932,
1933. Yeah, But see, that wouldn't have happened if not for the 14th Amendment.
It would have happened regardless.
I don't think that's happening.
That happened in Europe, in another country.
But
that,
the problem is, see,
had nothing to do with the fortune.
Well, no, in a sense it does, because if you know the first citizenship law, you know what the first citizenship law of the United States, when it was written, 3 years after the Constitution, giving everybody equal rights, but not everybody will be a citizen. Thomas Jefferson, John Adams,
that?
And everyone else.
Where is that? Is that in
is that an amendment? 1790 was written, the first citizenship law. Federal naturalization laws.
It's legislation, not an amendment or part of the Constitution.
Yeah, but just because we had a couple radical idiot morons put the 14th Amendment, create a 14th Amendment for our citizenship law, does that make it any even different or better? Or should we look at it in another way? Because these guys thought that
only,
that was their way.
Only
to
in
do
the
it,
sense.
Because they were radical Republicans. They were radical people.
Okay. But you asked, you know, is it any different? Is it any better? If it's an amendment to the Constitution, it's part of the Constitution.
Yeah, but the United States could, I mean, the Founding Fathers could have done that if they wanted.
And they did. They put in the Constitution, they put guidelines for that.
Yeah, if you read the federal naturalization laws, the citizenship laws of the United States, in the first sentence, it says alien, free, white will be citizens of the United States. That's what the Founding Fathers said. They wanted a country of people of likeness. Like they realized it's the only way a republic is going to work. Because if you get other people in, if you get diversities going, there'll be other groups, small groups, that eventually will want to be the majority and to have the power.
I think you're starting to lose me. You're starting to lose me on that. Because if something is part of the Constitution, it's going to supersede any legislation that was related to it.
Yeah, well, that's what those idiots did. Well, they didn't have a right to do so. Just because they did it, that doesn't mean it should be the case. It was tyranny. They got it in there.
Okay.
It's tyranny.
I just don't see how you're saying the Founding Fathers were basically, as presented, they were white supremacists because they wrote the.
No, they're not white supremacists. No, they just didn't want the best option.
They didn't want any diversity
for the country. No. That's what they. I'm sure that's why they wrote the 1790 citizenship law. Yeah, every other country in the world, 99% of most every country in the world are people of likeness. There's not diversity in other countries.
Mm-hmm.
This was the only
I get all that.
That was taken over.
It sounds like it's fitting right into a narrative. So.
No, it's not a narrative. If you call anything that the Founding Fathers did a narrative, then you shouldn't be in the United States. You should pack your bag and leave today.
No, I'm not. But listen, Thomas, I'm down to 20 seconds. I got 20 seconds left in my show, so we'll have to wrap it up.
You got to leave, man. Anybody who's not on with the Founding Fathers, we got to return to everything Founding Fathers, free anything else, and basically that's it. That's the law. And then we only have one party. We only have one party. We don't have two parties because there's no discussion. What is, what was written is, and that's it.
All right. Thank you, folks.
This is why
you have the mess today.
Yeah, that's why you have the mess today.
All right. Well,
we have too many idiots, and they know better.
Thanks for calling in, and I'm gonna wrap it up. I think we're already off the air, so I appreciate you calling.
I don't mind.
No,
diversity is definitely not the answer, man. That's probably the Achilles heel.
Well, the more diversity the more division there is. So, I mean, that's just
exactly right. Yeah, because everybody wants their own. You know, of course, you want to protect who you are as a being. As that's who you are. That's your DNA. That's, you know, so everybody is going to want more of them, and want more of them to be better off.
All right. Well, listen, we got to go. And like I said, I appreciate your call. Check in with us next week. Hopefully, G-Ski will be with us.
I'll talk to you then.
All right. See ya.
All right. See ya.
Hi, Susie. Susie, are you there? I just turned your mic on. All right. Good night.